Colleen wanted us to talk about, a while back, you know, Colleen and I were merging sort of the Jivamukti practice with the Iyengar practice with the Pitabu Joyce practice. That was sort of the idea of what Colleen and I were trying to do. We were trying to do it for a number of reasons, because we wanted the alignment and the attention that came from Iyengar, but we also wanted to keep the students happy by giving them enough movement. You know, because the whole idea of a convenience store is like one-stop shopping, right? And unfortunately or fortunately, we're not sure yet because we don't know the end result, a lot of the feeling about fitness and physical fitness these days, where a lot of people are coming into yoga for, it's the feeling like, wow, I want to get my sweat on, I want to, you know, learn poses, I want to do poses. You know, you can't always just say, don't be concerned about that. You know, you can't always tell people, even if it's good for them, you can't always just tell them what to think about. So you want, in order to have, teach someone, they have to be there. So Colleen's like always constantly trying to sort of keep up with the times and say, how can we deliver some of these more amazing messages to the general public? It's a very benevolent feeling, you know. And so we started creating what we called a Shanti Sweat class. And it was with all the principles that we were trying to deliver, and yet really, you know, almost athletic. So that was the idea. So the idea that first Colleen had was get a really good sequence. Like, let's create a sequence that everybody can sort of participate, that it's not so daunting, you know, and it graduates itself. So it goes from something that we all can do to maybe climaxing at something that, you know, not everybody can do, but it's not going to be hard to do, hard to try to do. And then, you know, a descending part of the bell, a quieting aspect, you know. And then Richard kept on telling us, you know, look, you know, leave some room for a good Shavasana, leave some room for those other qualities that you want to instill. So we're trying to juggle a lot of balls. So the first thing you have to do when you're creating these classes is, we're supposed to talk about an open class too. An open class is welcome to everybody. And also giving something, it's like having a big menu. Everybody wants to come eat the good food, and you want to have something on the menu for gluten-free, and you want to have someone who eats steak, and you want to have someone, you know, that wants a little pasta. You don't want a too big of a menu, but just big enough that everybody feels welcome. You know, sometimes you go to a restaurant and they have everything on the menu, and you're just like, I don't think I want to eat here. I remember when I was traveling across the country, and it was like Chinese, Japanese, American food. It was like, whoa, let's go to McDonald's. Okay, so enough of a menu where people are enticed. Don't always teach for the highest common denominator. Don't always teach for the lowest common denominator. Sometimes teach for the high end. Sometimes teach for the beginner that just walked in. Sometimes teach for someone in the middle. Pick someone who you want to teach to that day and let the whole class follow. If you're going to use blocks, don't give them options. Let's all use a block. People with very flexible bodies sometimes need parameters. So telling them to use a block at the highest block is a great lesson for them. And instead of looking for the great stretch, you know, it's like, consider what you're teaching. You know? So an open class is welcome to everybody, but at the same time, you want to make sure everybody feels like they've been given the meal they want, partly. And so you're tuning your lesson to that all the time. The sweat classes have to do with, how do you build a sweat, everybody?
Maybe faster cardio.
Sometimes faster cardio, sometimes weightlifting, right? Everybody says, you know, how does yoga build strength? Well, we know there's tons of poses to build strength, right? Maybe doing more repetitions, and longer timings, both.
Mm. Cold push for Konasana for 5 minutes, see what happens.
Literally, yeah. I mean, I remember going to India and the second class I took, we helped Harvey to Trikonostar for 5 minutes to a side. It was like, you've got to be freaking kidding me. You know, but what happens is that the lessons come up. All kinds of emotional lessons come up in that fire. All kinds of, you know, intellectual questions come up. Why did I come? You know, you're eventually, you have to listen to the breath. When you're at 17,000 feet, you're listening to the breath. I promise you. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, also, one of the justifications for holding the pose for so long is that after a while, the muscles that are typically holding the pose give up. They can't keep going for that long. So you have to find a new way to hold the pose.
And also, when you're doing movements, yes, in a second, when you're doing repetitive movements, like the first part of Sun Salutation A, just the first part, do that 10 times. You know, so even the most advanced person will find something that be interested in. Do you understand? You don't have to be complicated. Yes, Rianne.
For the long holds, as a teacher, do you have anything to say about the difference between there being silence or you talking them through those long holds about what's better and what is more beneficial to them? Because I thought talking would help engage their brains a little more.
Yeah, that's right.
But okay.
I mean, you can do it. You can do it in one of two ways. You can continuously talk. Or you can go around each person and give individual instruction. It depends on the size of the class and what's going on, who's there. But I mentioned the other day, when you have an open class and you have a range of students, you want to be sure that if you're giving the intermediate students something to do, you want to be sure that they're the only ones that are doing it. And you don't want, because the beginning students are going to want to do it too. A lot of them are. So again, you go up to the intermediate student and you whisper, something a little bit different, but you don't want to encourage the beginners to do any more than you've told them to do.
And what is the tendency? If you give something more advanced in class, everyone in class, no matter what their level, is going to try to attempt it. So it's not even a question. That's going to happen. Right? So you have to know that as a teacher, that will happen. So you have to mitigate, like he's saying, whisper a couple of instructions into your more advanced students here.
I hate to say this, but you'll have a lot of troubled old guys. You know, we find this true in California.
We're the most difficult people.
The older guys, they don't want to admit that they can't do this, they can't do that. Mm-hmm. And you give them a prop, to like Trikonasana or whatever. And you turn around and you walk with the next person, look back at 30 seconds later, prop's gone. Hands on the floor. So it's a challenge to work with some people who don't understand that there's a reason to do the pose in a certain way and not in the way they feel like they need to do it. And that's where you have to be a little bit firm with these folks. You know, not nasty or anything like that, but you have to explain, look, if you're going to put your hand on the floor like that, you're going to collapse on this side, you're going to do this, you're going to do that. You're not helping yourself. Maybe the hand will go to the floor if you do it like this for a while and you develop the ability to put your hand down. But in the meantime, would you please use this prop and see what happens?
And I found really the only effective way to do that is make the most flexible person in class use a block. And then someone looks at it, it's like, wow, why are they using a block? You know, and then they want to use a block. Otherwise, it's like some reprimand or something. Mm-hmm. And if the advanced student can't get something out of using the block at the highest height, they're not advanced. Do you understand? They're absolutely not looking deeply. So in some ways, the people who are using the most props, like Iyengar, he was the most advanced that I've ever seen. That's all he did was, he was on the horse, he was on the wall ropes, because he was trying to find something. He didn't want to spend all of his effort just saying, can I stay in the pose? He wanted to look for things. That's why when you get these people who are capable of doing a handstand in the middle of the room, and you tell them to use the wall, and they're like, why should I use the wall? I can do handstand in the middle of the room. Well, you can, but most of them, unless you've been doing handstand in the middle of the room for your entire life, most of you have to think about, can I stay here? And if you don't have to think about that when you're standing on your feet, right? Do you have to think about standing up? No. If you're at that point of standing on your hands, then go ahead, don't use the wall, because then we can talk about prana. But if unless you're at that place, use the wall.
One of the hardest things to do is to convince somebody new to your class to use blankets for shoulder stand.
That's me.
I've been practicing 15 years. I've never used shoulder stand. And when I say I've been practicing for 33 years, and I always use blankets, so you put blankets up. I mean, that's one thing that you have to be really, really insistent on, because people just aren't capable comfortably and safely doing a shoulder stand flat on the floor.
And what, anyways, in our modern society, what do necks actually anatomically look like in an X-ray or an MRI? Head forward, which basically means the cervical is flat. So there's no natural curve anymore. And so you're all of a sudden doing shoulder stand and you're encouraging that even more.
Yeah.
It will create seizing of the musculature. It really will, because the muscles will be trying to protect the spinal cord. It's a very smart thing. Yes,
so Wallace. If you were teaching in an environment where you don't have blankets, like a...
No shoulder stand.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. It's really simple.
Okay.
Would you use blankets even if you were just going to take them into plow?
Especially. Yeah. Especially plow. If you have... Some people shouldn't put their feet on the floor in plow. You should have a chair or something. Ronnie put... blankets or blocks under her feet.
And would you make sure that they had the three?
I insist on three minimum.
Yeah.
And then I, for new folks, I feel. And I say, well, you know, whatever. But my regular students know how many blanks they normally need.
Now, every so often you'll see Colleen and I do something like that without blankets. But try to follow the sequence of that, and then try to follow our instructions inside that, okay? A lot of times, Colleen will do a very piked shoulder stand where it's more like a Vibhuti Karani. But even a lot of you will say, why aren't they teaching shoulder stand? But we are. We're teaching shoulder stand in Vibhuti Karani position with your sacrum on a block like we did this morning in the class before with the public. You saw that, right? Those are the lessons you want to teach when it's not so weight-bearing. It is at 12, we're half a minute off.
Don't tell Colleen.
When you come back, triple up.